Well, I think that what we're going to do is we're going to, David and I have done this before. We want to talk about race in America.
Yeah.
And it's kind of interesting because for most white Americans, they rarely have interactions with the police at all. And when they do, it's usually a very friendly kind of thing. And then when you get into the black community and there's interactions with the police, it turns out to be very different. And we've all been watching all these demonstrations and all the people who have been killed by police, and all of them unarmed, except one, Philando Castile. And he told the police officer that he had a license to carry. But there's been Michael Brown, Trayvon Martin, George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Eric Garner, Stephen Clark, Tamir Rice. The names just go on and on. Ahmed Arbery now, killed because he's jogging, you know. And unfortunately, most of the people who have been responsible for these killings are not brought to justice. So David and I have been having this conversation about race for quite some time. And as David can attest to, he's had his own life experiences being a black American.
David, yeah. Tell us a little bit about your experience.
Yeah, so, it's been interesting growing up in Oklahoma, born and raised, and I was privileged to have both my parents in the household. Both of my parents are educated, but being African American male, you still get some level of treatment relative to others. And, it was interesting. I was talking with Tom and his wife Peggy whenever I was out to dinner with them, and we were talking about even getting pulled over by the police here in Bartlesville, how I was sitting in the back seat, my wife was driving, and at the time our daughter, she was in the back seat, little girl, so she was crying, a little bit fussy, so I jumped in the back seat to check on her, and we're driving down the road and get pulled over, I think going a little bit over the speed limit, that's on my wife, right? And so we get pulled over a little bit. And so the police officer is talking to my wife, but then looks in the back seat and sees I'm sitting back there and begins to ask questions to me about why I'm sitting in the back seat and proceeds to ask me for my driver's license. Mind you, I'm not the individual operating a car. And this happened a couple of years ago. And so I subsequently talked to a couple of friends who are actually on the police department, and that was outside of standard protocol. If you don't have a reason to ask someone or probable cause to ask someone for their driver's license that's not operating the vehicle, that shouldn't be the case. And so you get into a conversation of, hey, from an African-American black perspective, why are black people being policed differently than white people? And the list goes on and on, even as Tom and I have talked about. You have African-Americans getting killed by whether it's the police officers or by people who deputize themselves and call themselves trying to enforce some instance of law and order. But it becomes a whole nother thing whenever that individual dies and the people or the individual who killed them is not held accountable by the justice system. The person who killed them or the system that killed them is not held accountable by other institutions in this country. And it seems like that death is justified and affirmed in very interesting and unrealistic ways. And so one of the things that Tom and I have done over the course of the past couple of years is have these conversations privately, but we decided we can't just no longer have those conversations privately.
Like to expand the discussion.
We got to expand the discussion, expand the audience. And so 2 years ago, Tom and I held an event at Tri-County Tech where we were able to engage a room of about 70 people traveling from Bartlesville, of course, people traveling from Tulsa up to Bartlesville to have that conversation with us, and it was great.
Wow. Yeah. And are you planning on setting up some dates here in the near future?
We are, yeah. So last year, Tom and I partnered with the Oklahoma Lifelong Learning Institute to hold a six-week course on prejudice and unconscious bias at Bartlesville Library, Bartlesville Public Library. And so we're looking to do a similar program in the fall again. But one of the things that we want to communicate to your viewing audience is, and listening audience is, hey, whenever you see everything going on in this country, realize that there's a historical context that shapes this present moment. And so Tom and I, through the session that we did at Tri-County Tech, through the sessions that we did at the Bartlesville Public Library, we're engaging the audience in a way where we're trying to uncover historical facts, mm-hmm. And uncover whether it's historical people, moments, movements in time that really get us to this present moment and help us understand, hey, mm-hmm. Why are unarmed Black people still being killed by the police? Why are those individuals who are doing the killing not held accountable by the justice system? And why do you have a country that now in this present moment is rioting and is protesting as a result of that? And what does that mean relative to things that have taken place in the past? And hopefully, how can we reimagine our future and, you know, shape it in a way that, you know, provide justice for everybody?
In a sense, you've kind of hit the nail on the head when you mention unconscious bias, because the fact of the matter is that if you ask the average white person, you know, are you racist, they're going to say no,
because they don't believe that they are.
They don't believe that they are. Yeah. But under the right circumstances, there's unconscious bias that they carry mm-hmm. with them, and they don't even recognize it. And I think that the time has come, and especially in this environment right now where people are protesting all over the United States, I think we have an opportunity to really start to educate people, bring people along, make them understand what unconscious bias really is and how it works. And I have a feeling that as we begin to explore unconscious bias, you're going to find the reasons why police have this unconscious fear of Black men. I mean, I worry about guys like David because he's in very good physical condition. And because he's in good physical condition, if he gets pulled over by a cop, cops are going to look at him and go like, oh, this guy is like, you know, he could be a piece of work here. He could be difficult to handle. And that makes me worry about guys like him. And yet, he's not going to do anything that would be untoward mm-hmm. at all.
Yeah.
So you're
looking at a family guy who also takes
exactly.
another kid.
He's
so
got
it's
two
like,
children, yeah. and you know.
Yeah, and whether it's an yeah. individual who you know is a family individual or somebody who is like a single person and they're just trying to live their life. What Tom and I have often expressed is. Provide equality and justice for everyone.
Sure.
The ability to have life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, which was guaranteed in the Constitution of these United States, it hasn't been made available to every citizen. And Tom and I would argue that if you look back historically, there are moments in time that help us realize why our current environment is shaped the way it is. And, you know, whether it was the class that we had at the Bartlesville Public Library, where we're talking about going all the way back to Emancipation Proclamation signed mm-hmm. in 1863 and looking at that moment. Then we took a really interesting and in-depth look at an instance that happened here in Oklahoma with the Tulsa Race Massacre about the context for which that was set up and how the Ku Klux Klan was running rampant in the state of Oklahoma and how it was interesting the relationship between the police department and the Klan. Right. And so you have individuals that might get arrested and the Klan would go to the county jail and say, hey, bring those Black people outside. We want to deal with them ourselves. And you had justice being administered outside of the system of the police department. And so, you know,
outside the jurisdiction of the court.
From a historical perspective, mm-hmm. that's why we argue it's very important that for people who want to take this moment seriously, and we're mindful that not everyone is on board for this conversation, but for those who might be and want to be engaged with us from a thoughtful perspective, look at history. Take a serious look at history with us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Tom and I, we try to present the information from a nonpartisan perspective.
Sure.
We realize very quickly that can send people to the margins. That will send people to their corners of the ring whenever
quicker
you start
than you
talking
know why.
Politics.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. But we believe that equality is a nonpartisan issue.
Thomas?
Yeah, one of the things that I think that I would like to mention is the fact that I started off in life as a racist. Not because I wanted to be a racist, because I was brought up as a racist. And I grew up
That was
up
your
in,
conditioning.
Yeah, I was brought up in New York City, which is supposed to be a northern, you know, liberal place. And yet we were all brought up where the N-word was used on a constant basis. And prejudice was just a natural thing for us. And it really was not until I started to educate myself as to in Black history that I was able to really make a total, complete turnaround. And that's a very important thing, because I think most racists don't even sometimes know that they're racist. I did. But Black history turned me around. And I can name in every decade since the Civil War how Black people as a whole have been held back by the United States government. And we have created two Americas here. And one America is for whites and one America is for the Black. And that's the piece that we have to change. In the last 50 years, this mass incarceration that we've gone through, if you look at the statistics, as for instance, reported by the New York Times, Black men in their 30s are behind bars on any given day by 10% of the Black male population. I mean, that's a stunning statistic, mm-hmm. considering that they're not the majority population. They're the minority population, at least for now. But eventually, they will be the majority in this country. And the problem that they will have at that time, and this is going past 2050, is whites will still control the wealth of the country. And that's the piece that we have to change. I mean, we've destroyed Black Wall Street in Tulsa in 1921, and we still haven't even thought about giving reparations to the families of those who remain. Mm-hmm. And what we did, in essence, is we stole the wealth from the Black community in Tulsa. And I think that the state of Oklahoma actually owes reparations, all right, to the families of that riot. And I really truly believe that. And I say that because there's not a decade that has gone by since the Civil War that we cannot point to how the government and states have denied Black Americans their rights to live in the same way as whites in this country.
So let's have a conversation. When's the next conversation point going to be? What are we going to set up? At Tri-County Tech again?
Well, one of the things that we're hoping is that somewhere along the line, we would like to do another Ollie class. Mm-hmm. We would also like to do more radio. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I would love to be able to do is to have people call in with their questions. Because I got to tell you, when people start calling in, they ask questions that are very difficult to answer. Mm-hmm. And they express their opinions. And it's those opinions that keep us where we are. And if you can change some of those opinions by giving them the truth and the right answers to the questions that they have, we can really have an impact and we can really change things.
Very good. Final words, young man?
Just really appreciative for the radio station opening up this avenue to Tom and I. Mm-hmm. And like Tom said, the ability to partner with radio, the ability to partner with different community venues to be able to hold public conversations, it's essential. We realize that we're at an interesting inflection point in this country. And if we're not having courageous conversations as a community, as a Bartlesville community, then really we can get left behind and think that, oh, those are just issues that exist in other communities whenever we have our own realities here. And so I really challenge and encourage your listening community to reach out to Tom and I, to stay connected for mm-hmm. public conversations. There were several rallies that took place mm-hmm. with related to Black Lives Matter and the death of George Floyd. Attend those. Educate yourself so that you're not sitting in ignorance whenever something comes up and you're asked about it, or you know, whether you're at work, around friends and family. Be mindful of the historical context within this contemporary moment that we live in, and educate yourself about it.
Gentlemen, I want to thank you very much for dropping by today. Appreciate the conversation.
Hey, thank you, Tom.
Thank you,
Tom. We really appreciate you, man.
All right. We've got more coming up in just a few right now. 9:45 here at K1, the one you trust.